Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hey guys, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are on season one, episode 14. I've got you under my skin. And it was really odd because as I was typing out what number episode we're on, I was like, what in the world? We're on episode 14, which means we're starting to kind of get to the back end of the season. And I won't say necessarily that it's been so fast, but it's kind of cool being here already and like looking back and being like, wow. We've recorded now almost 14 episodes, and I'm like, take a moment, give yourself a little golf clap, pat yourself on the back, be like, that's kind of a big accomplishment, because apparently a lot of podcasts don't get past three episodes, so good job.
I was just thinking that too, that we're like getting into like, yeah, we're more than halfway done.
Mm-hmm.
Season one, which is amazing, especially since we do like bi-weekly episodes. So
it's especially amazing given how many crappy episodes are in the first half or the first two thirds. So I just want to give ourselves another like massive round of applause for getting through them.
We've had fun with them though. We've had like fun like recording them and talking about them, which is good. It's definitely, it makes it like a much more enjoyable like rewatching experience, I think.
I agree.
To talk about them here. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, just having Prophecy Girls with us for She, I think I'm going to just start scheduling guests for the crappier episodes because it makes it so much more enjoyable. They're going to hate it. They're going to be like, I want to talk about, you know,
I don't
Epiphany
watch this
or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, right. I don't want to watch She or Expecting, but no, like, we're like, hey, if you want to be on our podcast, do it on our terms.
Watch a crappy episode.
That'll be like the new thing. If you want to be a guest, you have to do a crappy episode and a good episode. That's
like
the toll.
That. Yeah, I think that's a good like exchange.
Yeah, there you go, listeners. If you're ever
compromised
on our podcast, there you go. You have to do a crappy episode, and it'll be fun. We'll make it fun. It'll be
good. Exactly.
But Leia, this is not a crappy episode, and I am so excited to talk about it because this episode holds a really special place in my heart. I don't know why. Actually, no, I think I kind of do know why. When I first was watching through Angel, I really struggled to connect with the show until this episode. I always will remember this episode as being the one that piqued my interest and got me fully invested into the series. Like up until now, there's been some good episodes, but I was kind of like, hit or miss. But this episode was the one that I was like, okay, I like this. I'm fully invested. And I think a lot of that has to do with how it rounds out Wesley's character and really gives us layers and depth. I don't know. I feel like this is the gang at their best in a lot of ways. And I really, really enjoyed the dynamic in this one.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really remember. I remember watching this episode for like the first time and being absolutely shocked at all the plot twists.
There's a lot,
because there's just so many and they're so good. But I don't remember like what hooked me onto Angel the series initially. Like honestly, I'm pretty sure I just wanted to see more Angel and I just liked the show automatically.
Like, I was going to say, you were hooked from the first opening sequence with Angel because that's who draws.
I just don't remember. I just remember like being like, yeah, like I'm going to watch this show. Like there was never a point where I was like, oh, I don't want to watch this anymore until probably like the later seasons.
Sure. We'll get there.
But yeah, this is definitely a really, really fun episode. It's so spooky. It's the twists are like really unexpected. Like if you're watching this for the first time, like you're really going to be like clutching your pearls. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least I was. So I think that's what I like about this episode so much is that they do those twists like so well. And it's just, it's eerie. Like it really just makes you think about everything we've like really ever known about what it means to have a soul. And like,
yeah,
it's very. And then there's like the daddy issue stuff that's been like a theme last episode, this yeah. episode, next episode. It's just like, we get it, guys. Like, you don't have to keep like throwing it in my face. But
yeah, I wonder if you're going somewhere with this. Yes, spoiler alert, we are.
Are we?
I mean, kind of. Yeah. No, I feel like that's kind of a theme for the rest of the show in a lot of ways, is daddy issues. Like, not a massive theme, but it crops up every once in a while. But yeah, this episode, I think I just really like it whenever there's an episode. And I think this is something that Tabby and I, my co-host on Becoming Buffy, talk a lot about. We really, really love it when Buffy and Angel episodes really kind of delve more into the horror tropes and horror genre. Mm-hmm. Because it does it so freaking well. Like, I
this
think about
the exorcism of the Buffyverse. Yes. Like,
of course. Yes. Yeah. And then just
or
like
exorcist, the sorry. Whole,
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, they're exorcising. What are they exorcising? Angelus out of Angel? Like,
I wish. Whoops.
There you go. Series done. Buffy, come back. Whoops, spoiler alert. That's how the show ends. They just exercise Angelus out.
Don't play with my emotions like this.
I know. I'm so sorry. No, but I love the horror-esque feel of things like this. Just even the lighting, they always go like a lot darker, and it feels kind of like season one Buffy. I think of like Helpless with just very Hitchcock vibes, and a lot of season one really leaned – or season one of Buffy really leaned into more of the horror tropes and stuff, and I eat it up because I – just that gothic feel is just really fun to me. I love that genre. But before we jump into the episode, just a quick PSA for you guys. If you'll notice, Investigating Angel and Becoming Buffy both did not take a hiatus for the holidays in December. And the reason for that is because we're actually going to take a bit of a break in this month of February. We will be gone for about 2 weeks, and then Becoming Buffy will be back at the very end of February on the 23rd, and Investigating Angel will be back on March 2nd. For The Prodigal. And the reason for this is because me and my family are going to be moving cross country. We're going to be getting out of the Air Force. There's just going to be a lot of really big moves coming up. So in an effort to give you guys really good quality episodes, and in order to be able to get everything done that I need to, we just need to take a little bit of a break. But don't worry, it's just for a couple weeks, and then we'll be back. All right, so I've Got You Under My Skin was directed by R.D. Price, aired February 15th, 2000, and the story was by David Greenwald and Janine Renshaw. The teleplay was by Janine Renshaw. So I'm sure that David Fury kind of like helped develop this story, and then Janine Renshaw kind of took it and made it into a script and stuff. But as always, we have the many other writers who are probably heavily involved. I know Tim Minear is also very involved in how this story kind of eventually played out on screen. So I've Got You Under My Skin. The song was written by Cole Porter in 1936 and originally performed by Virginia Bruce. And it's probably most famously sung by Frank Sinatra. The lyrics, I mean, I think it's like the singer's talking about like an affair, but the lyrics are kind of interesting. I've got you under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me, so deep in my heart that you're really a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I tried so not to give in. I said to myself, this affair will never go so well, but why should I try to resist it when, baby, I know so well? I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my ear, don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time that I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin, because I've got you under my skin. Which is funny because it's supposed to be kind of a love song.
Yeah.
But then you read it without the music and you're like, this is really creepy. This is not romantic at all.
This is an exorcism.
This is an exorcism. Yeah, exactly. And this episode, okay, so this episode actually has callbacks to a Buffy episode. Can you guess which one, Leia, if you don't already know?
Season two. Killed by Death, maybe?
No. Yeah, but you got the right season.
I don't know. Tell me.
Okay, well, I believe that this episode has a lot of like very obvious callbacks to the Dark Age When Giles' past comes to haunt him, and then you have the demon Igon that possesses Jenny. Then there's the scene where Jenny slash Igon grabs Giles, and then she says, "You've got me under your skin." I always remember that one line. And who's the one that ends up saving Jenny slash Angel, because he takes the demon inside of him and then fights, and Angelus wins and kills Igon and stuff. And I think there's obvious nods to this episode because they specifically say, oh, the demon needs to jump into a warm body, not a cold one.
Yes,
they
realized that.
Because then they could use the exact same
thing. It is very
similar
to the Dark Age.
So I went back and I looked up my notes for the Dark Age because, unfortunately, I don't have an amazing memory and I can't always like remember like the themes of each episode as we go through. And so I wrote down some of my notes from the Dark Age, and it actually like parallels pretty well. So Dark Age, it deals heavily with themes of addiction and control, specifically in the form of magic. In Never Kill a Boy on the First Date, Giles shares that he comes from a family of watchers and that he was always expected to be one. Who does that sound like?
Oh, Wesley.
Yes, exactly. So it's not too much of a stretch to think that his abuse of magic stems from a desire to regain control over his life. It makes for an interesting parallel to Buffy's struggle with her calling and explains why Giles pushes her in her slaying duties and refuses to ask for her help in dealing with Igon, which we kind of in this situation, like Giles kind of parallels both Wesley and Angel in this episode. And in the end, Giles realizes that he needs to forgive himself and move on from his past, while Buffy discovers that even stodgy watchers are people with struggles, which is what we discover about Wesley in this episode. Mm-hmm. In the episode, Igon mocks Giles, comparing his emotion and inability to control the demon to that of a woman. Giles is actually showing true strength in that he recognizes his own limitations and shows empathy and remorse for those he's hurt. And then on the flip side, Ethan Rain, who's also in that episode, does something similar in his taunting of Buffy, except he mocks her strength and calls her manly. And we have Ethan running from the consequences of his actions, all while refusing to admit that he's responsible and yet repeatedly condemning Giles. And then Giles and Ethan contrast each other, showing that it is not if you will make mistakes, but whether or not you will have the strength to take responsibility for them. And I feel like that is very much Wesley. And I just love how there's kind of a little bit of a mirroring of Giles and Wesley in this episode, and even Angel and Giles too. So I don't know. It just is like very cool how it all just kind of like comes together there. So like kind of like as I already hinted, this episode, while it does focus on Angel's acceptance of Wesley into the gang, I feel like the character that grows the most in this episode is actually Wesley. It feels like a real turning point for his character, not just for like Wesley kind of taking the next step forward, but also for us as the audience and understanding why Wesley is the way he is. And I love that it's very subtle. I love that there's no like massive, really big aha moments, but there's little things that happen throughout the episode that you're like, wait a minute, let's rewind. That sounds really, really, is that as bad as I think it is? You know?
Well, it feels like this episode is really important for Wesley, is setting up like a lot of things for him that will come to a head like later on in the series.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. So Tim Minear says, later in season one, we did an episode called I've Got You Under My Skin. This was one of the very early scripts that we wrote before Doyle was killed. The thing I pitched to Joss was the parallels between this family and our little family. My idea was that Angel should accidentally call Wesley Doyle because it should be about these two men who lose a son. At the end of the story, the father loses his son, and at the beginning of the story, Angel has lost a son, sort of, in quotations. These two men are desperately trying to keep their family together, and through no fault of their own, they can't. Once we sort of hit upon that, the theme becomes much clearer. If you can find the emotional resonance with your character in a plot, then the thing starts to fall into place much more easily. It's not just a bunch of moves, which is what it was before. We went in a million different directions in the development process. Angel lost this youth. Angel was possessed by a demon. Angel understands this kid. That's kind of there, but not really. Then it became about that moment where the kid speaks in Doyle's voice and Angel grabs the towel, wraps it around his hand, and grabs the cross. The idea of a vampire having to perform an exorcism is just too great. Oh, I love that moment. Oh, best moment of the episode. Like that whole sequence right there with like Wesley trying to do the exorcism, then Angel having to step in. Oh, so good. So good. So Joss Whedon actually came up with the twist that Ryan was more evil than the demon who possessed him. He also cut the priest out of the script, so the priest was supposed to be there. In the first draft of the script, he was going to do the exorcism, and then Whedon was like, hey, why can't Wesley perform the ritual? And Tim Minear says, suddenly it makes perfect sense because Angel's problem at the beginning of the story is, I let Doyle die because he did something I couldn't do. Now you have Wesley saying, I can perform this exorcism. You can't. When Angel later saves Wesley's life, Minear says he's sort of atoning for the Doyle thing, even though that really wasn't his fault. That's mm-hmm. why we could keep going back to episode 9 and say it was absolutely right to kill Doyle because it made the second half of the season that much stronger. And yeah, I agree.
100%. And I like that, you know, we're in episode 14. Doyle's been dead for
five episodes
now, yeah. and we're still talking
yes.
about Doyle's death and how
yes.
much of an impact it made, which is, you know, it doesn't have to be a central point of every episode, and it hasn't been, but it's there. And I think they used it really well in this episode, especially because, you know, Wesley came in to replace Doyle. Well, not like narrative, like Cordelia's replacing Doyle in that sense, like the dynamic, mm-hmm. but Wesley came in because Doyle left. So we've right. got to like accept Wesley into the group now fully, and Angel has to accept him fully. So I think they really like did such a great job with that in this episode.
I agree. The moment that you hear Doyle's voice is so jarring. Yeah. It literally gave me goosebumps when I saw it. And I was like, oh my gosh. I frankly have never really seen how much the theme of Doyle's death affecting everybody, mm-hmm. like, and that being woven into the show until this rewatch. Now that I'm like looking for it, and like you said, five episodes later, I'm like, I don't think I've ever caught that this episode was about the dealing of Doyle's death. I think I always got caught up in the flashiness of the exorcism and the kid doesn't have a soul and like how cool that is. But I really just appreciate how intentional they're being with the death and how they're still dealing with it, and not in a way that's like hitting you over the head,
yeah.
but in a way that feels very tasteful. So Passion of the Nerd talks about how it's been hinted at before this, but that Wesley's actually more competent than we give him credit for, but that it's actually his lack of self-confidence that holds him back a majority of the time, not his incompetence, which is so funny because I actually think I agree with him. Because in season 3, you're thinking, oh, he's incompetent. But now, like, looking at it through the lens of season 1 of Angel, I look back and I'm like, oh, no, he actually was competent. He's mm-hmm. just insanely insecure. And now we're finding out why.
And it didn't help over on Buffy that, like, everyone was just not – everyone kind of, like, yeah. he was the new watcher. Giles had just gotten fired. Like, obviously, they're not going to like him because why would they yeah. trust the Watcher's Council, especially after Helpless? So it's like he's coming into mm-hmm. the situation that's already set up against him. Nobody's, yeah. like, cutting him slack. Nobody is very welcoming to him for good reasons, in my opinion. So mm-hmm. obviously – his like already existing insecurities are going to be amplified, and he's going to look like a complete buffoon most of the time because he's just like right. doesn't know how to be in this environment right now. So yeah, it's right. completely understandable, but you definitely need like watching Buffy for the first time and not having seen Angel, like obviously you're not going to come to that conclusion, but like it really, like they really go into it in this season, and it's so interesting to see like these subtle, like the subtle depth in Wesley's character already mm-hmm. and be able to like link it back to his time in Sunnydale. So,
it's so refreshing to not have a one-dimensional character because it's so easy to be like, Wesley's just comic relief. Wesley's just the buffoon, but they're actually like giving him like substance, and it's always been there. But I think they're really starting to like delve deeply into that. And I believe Wesley is one of the better, most well-written characters and character arcs throughout the entire Buffyverse. But I also recognize I have an insane bias because I just really resonate with Wesley, and I'm a sucker for the trope of the ridiculously like idiotic person that has layers and depth to them and like can become serious and intense. So I kind of just eat that up. So I have to kind of like, okay, is this actually well written, or is this just like me really liking this trope? But I truly do believe Wesley is very well written.
I think so too.
All right, so we're in Angel's apartment, and Angel and Wesley are sitting at the kitchen table looking at an intricate dagger, kind of like geeking out like two guys with, like, oh my gosh, the mark of Kekla blah, 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 or whatever they say, because I don't even – it's like Kefla Dorum or something like that. They're like, oh my gosh, it's the only way to kill a Kek demon. They're like geeking out, blah, blah, blah. Cordelia comes in and is like, oh my gosh, nobody touched my brownies. And then is like, okay, I got to cut the brownies. And her knife is like – too dull. So then she's using,
goes like a butter knife, but the brownies are like rock hard because she obviously can't make them. Brownies.
She's like, oh my gosh, it's not a problem with the brownies, it's the knife. And so she grabs Wes's dagger, and he just, like, you could see him like internally screaming, like,
no, 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 no.
And she's like, is it clean? And he's like, well, yes, but – and then he – and then, you know, they start bickering and fighting. And Wesley goes, Angel, make her stop. Just like, you know, hammering home the whole like dad with his two annoying kids or whatever. And they start insulting each other. And Angel goes, Cordelia, Doyle. And then it just kind of like immediately the whole lightheartedness of the scene just kind of gets really heavy for a minute. And this moment is so uncomfortable, but such a clever way to show what the characters are struggling with while also introducing what the episode is kind of going to be dealing with in a way that is just not heavy-handed. And I just, oh, I eat up moments like this because it's so smart. Also, on top of that, so I never like really picked up on it until this rewatch, but Wesley is, of course, struggling with belonging and feeling confident about his own abilities. And by Angel calling him Doyle, he's actually just kind of like poking at that insecurity that Wesley already has, because Wesley's like questioning his role in the gang and whether he's seen for who he is and what he contributes versus just the Doyle replacement. And so by Angel calling him Doyle, we immediately go back to insecure Wesley going, am I even wanted or needed here? Which is smart.
I think the one thing this episode was missing is seeing Wesley's reaction to being called Doyle, or like, I guess more of like a direct conversation maybe. I know they have that like really quick exchange in the sewer, but it had more to do with like Wesley, what the demon was saying about Wesley wanting to kill Angel. I feel like it would have been nice to have some type of, I don't know, just like acknowledgement of Wesley feeling that way, being called Doyle. But I also understand why it wouldn't be in there, because it's like, you know, if why add like a small scene like that? But I don't know. It would have been nice, but I also understand why it wasn't there. So yeah.
I actually really agree. I feel like the show's kind of going the more like a roundabout route. That makes sense. But they're kind of just saying like, hey, we're going to like have little moments like the sewer. We're going to have little moments like where Wesley's like, oh my gosh, I'm not trying to kill you, Angel. Or like other things like that. Or like, was it in Somnambulist? Oh no, it was in Parting Gifts where Angel says, I couldn't have saved you, Cordelia, without a, you know, rogue demon hunter next to me. Like little things like that where it shows that like the gang is just like subtly accepting him into their fold. But I agree with you. I think that it would have been really nice to have a moment between Wesley and Angel where they just address the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And where Angel just says, hey, you're here because I want you here, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think they do, like, there is a scene where he goes, oh, it's because I invited him. But I just think it's like, you know, especially thinking of like the audience watching the show as it was airing and not really being receptive to Wesley. It's like, you guys just said out loud what the audience has been thinking and you didn't even like address it like head on, which I get, like there's little hints everywhere, but I feel like that would have helped to like, I guess, warm people up to accepting Wesley if it was addressed, you know, like he's not Doyle, but he's something new. He's his like own person at this point, and he brings something to the table into the show that Doyle maybe didn't bring.
But it was just funny because I feel like
yeah, they're basically saying it out loud, which these shows do a lot. They will basically call themselves out through the characters like in the show, and like they'll say exactly what the audience is thinking. But in this case, they didn't really like address it head on, which is, it's fine. Like they do in other ways, but yeah, just like an interesting thought.
That's a really good point. I honestly hadn't thought about it before like that. But I wonder if, like, the point you made about how, like, the audiences were not receptive to Wesley at this point. Mm-hmm. They wanted Doyle back. But I wonder if the show was trying to, or the writers were trying to be really delicate about it and didn't want to shove Wesley down people's throats and be like, oh, Wesley and Cordelia have just embraced him, so you should too. They were trying to show the struggle it is for Angel and Cordelia and then watch them slowly start to accept him so that it helps the bring the audience along. But I think it probably would have helped if we've had a few more conversations where Angel was like, yeah, we want you mm-hmm. here. And yeah, I agree. All right. So then we cut immediately to the Anderson home. It looks like the family just moved in. There's a couple of kids, Ryan and Stephanie, who are coloring. And then they start bickering and fighting. The parallels of this scene to Cordelia and Wesley just arguing is, again, the subtle comparisons between the two families. It's time for bed. The mom goes and kisses the daughter goodnight. And then we like okay, I will say the weakest part of this episode is the dad red herring, because they really like lean into this dad being like really ominousing and creepy. And I, for what? They're really, it was just, it's just supposed to be a twist.
I thought it was good. I thought it was.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was like the obvious like route to go. And you kind of buy it. Like, if imagine watching this for the first time, like kind of like, oh, yeah, like, obviously it's the dad. They're setting this up and it's going to be the dad and all of this. But then there's, like, another twist where you think it's the sister at one point. And then another twist like where you're like, what? Yeah, and then it's the demon. But then there's, like, four different twists. And I thought the dad one really did work because it kind of – it's kind of like Somnambulist, like the episode that we just released where it's, like, you think Angel's doing it, but really it's not Angel. Whereas, like – you know, and the dad and Angel are kind of paralleling each other in this episode. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, you just enjoyed the twist. And I agree. I think that the twist was interesting. It definitely like was not what I thought it was going to be. I just feel like from a thematic standpoint, it kind of clashed with what they were trying to do with showing the two families. Because you can say, oh, the dad was acting that way because he's feeling guilty about not being able to protect his family. And he's kind of distancing himself emotionally because of it. And that's kind of what Angel has been doing. But they kind of just leaned so hard into it with the dad that it felt like, okay, you're just intentionally trying to trick us, not you're trying to layer something. So I appreciate more when the episode is intentionally doing something because they have like a theme or a metaphor or something they're going with. But with the dad, it was more just like, we just don't want you to know that it's the kid. And that felt kind of cheap to me. But
yeah,
it's not a huge deal. That's fair. That's just me being nitpicky because, you know, it's my podcast and I'm a nitpicky person. So deal with it, Leia. No,
I'm dealing with it.
You're like, gosh, I was fine with it until you rubbed it in my face.
Deal with my own insecurities here, all right? Okay, Wesley.
I know, right? There was a couple of like, ooh, okay. I will have a monologue later. Don't worry. Anyway, okay. So we see these massive locks on the door, which not going to lie, I think every parent has thought about this at one point or the other. Yeah. All right. So then we're back in Angel's office and Angel's sitting with a book at his desk. Cordelia comes in. This is hilarious. Cordelia goes, pretend to read any good books lately. And I was like, oh my gosh, has Cordelia found the Buffy pictures in the books and knows that Angel's just sitting there looking at Buffy's pictures is not actually reading a book?
Cordelia's not looking at anyone's books or anything. She's just...
I feel like Angel's actually reading books for the most part. Like yeah, all jokes aside.
Angel actually does read. Like what else is he going to do?
Clearly, the man knows his art, knows his stuff about like, I mean, I know he lived through a lot of history, like we talked about in She and stuff, but I think he reads extensively. I think he enjoys it a lot.
I mean, we saw him doing it in Sunnydale too. So I think it's definitely something he's not pretending to read. I think he actually does read.
Yeah.
It's just his way of like, you know, it's his hobby. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's far fetched to say that he reads for fun.
I will say, I do like this scene. Cordelia comes in and basically is like, hey, let's talk about this. Let's open up a little bit. You never say Doyle's name. And I really like this scene because I feel like as much as I loved Parting Gifts, it really didn't delve into Angel's guilt as much as it focused on Cordelia's grief mm-hmm. and then the introduction of Wesley. And so I think that while it might have been believable to kind of move past a little bit, I think that we also would have been like, why don't we really see Angel dealing with Doyle's death? Because Doyle died for him, you know? Mm-hmm. So I really like that we kind of get into that a little bit this episode.
Yeah, it's really nice to see Angel like say it out loud, like, I miss him, because he's not very, I guess, vocal with how he feels in a lot of situations. So it is nice that he just kind of, you know, he accepted like being called out and decided to like share his feelings.
I really like that Cordelia is saying that, like, I know you've got this whole unflappable vibe working for you, but you don't have to do it for me. Is little things like this shows that Cordelia is starting to see outside of herself and mm-hmm. is starting to watch and notice things about Angel and recognize when he's doing things for her. And instead of selfishly being like, oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. I'd rather not talk about it either. She's going, okay, no, I've already dealt with this a little bit. Now I'm going to go and help you deal with it. And I kind of like that little moment. I thought it was really good. Mm-hmm. And I also think this is more believable now because, like, we've always known Cordelia is capable of empathy. We've seen a few brief moments on Buffy, but her having the visions gives us a very tangible spot where we can pinpoint where the change actually happened.
Right.
Because it forces her to empathize with people's pain through experiencing it. And so this gives her connection with Angel. So it would make a lot of sense why she would be looking to Angel to open up, because she's starting to understand what empathy feels like a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, I think Cordelia still has a lot of work to do because – like, this is great. And yes, there's obviously we can pinpoint a time when she's like started to be more empathetic. But I think with Cordelia at this point, it's very much like she doesn't care about Wesley's feelings. She cares about Angel's. And she like flat out says that. And it's like, that's fine. Like, I understand why. But it just kind of gives you an idea of the Cordelia that's still very self-involved at this point also, because Angel is like her only friend right now. Angel's the only person that she sees value in at this time, mm-hmm. value like relative to herself, because she gets visions for Angel.
For
so her purpose is like tied up in Angel.
Right.
Her purpose is not tied up in Wesley. So she doesn't care about Wesley's feelings.
Right.
So it's like we're seeing little changes in Cordelia, but there's still like some ways to go because she's still very self-involved.
Right.
And Angel just so happens to be a part of her self-involvement now. Through the visions. And because, you know, they both had a connection to Doyle and she's, you know, she was devastated by Doyle's death and so is Angel. So they share that grief together. But I still think it's like, okay, Cordelia, like the world doesn't revolve just around you. Like Wesley's feelings are also valid here. So it'll be interesting to see how she like, she's growing slowly, which is nice. Like she's starting to see beyond herself through the visions. But I just don't think that she's there yet. Like I don't think that she's, I think she feels the pain of the visions that she gets, but it's still just Cordelia's
selfishly
world
motivated.
And everyone's living in it, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it's yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens, but that's just the feeling that I get. It's still very much all about Cordelia.
Yeah.
Like, all the time.
No, and I do not disagree. I think that I appreciate them going this way. Instead mm-hmm. of suddenly being like, oh my gosh, she's altruistic and, you know,
for
unselfish,
sure.
because then it wouldn't feel like Cordelia. So I like that we're seeing these baby steps while also retaining what makes Cordelia Cordelia, mm-hmm. which is still a lot of that selfishness because it wouldn't be believable. So I 100% agree with what you're saying, but I also think that like we are progressing, even
yeah.
if it's still selfishly motivated, like it's still believable, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So Angel says, I've been around death before a lot. I've lost people and I've killed people. And Cordelia's like, and you're dead. And he's like, yes, obviously, Cordelia. So he admits that Doyle's death shouldn't have happened, that he shouldn't have let it happen. And Cordelia's like, it wasn't your fault. And then she says, it hurts. And Angel looks away, says, yeah. And then she's like, no, I mean, it really, really hurts. And we're like, oh, okay, wow. For a moment, thought there was empathy there. But no, she's talking about her vision. I'm curious why this vision hurt so much because, like, it was just kind of showing the kid. Maybe she was – oh, I wonder if she was seeing the pain of the demon inside the kid.
Imagine.
He's like, it's dark and it's empty and I can't get out.
Just meant to assume that all of her visions hurt.
I think
it's just they were trying to do, like, a little – oh, like, it hurts. Like, we think she's talking about the you know, Doyle's death, but really it's about the vision, like to kind of segue into the vision maybe.
Yeah.
That's why she like announced that it hurts. But I think we're meant to think that like all of her visions, because we've seen Doyle go through them and her too. So
yeah.
I think they all kind of hurt just like that.
All right. So Angel and Wesley decide to go scope out the street. And I like that they don't have this conversation, but it, like at least on screen. But we kind of like we have Angel go to talk to people and then Wesley's just like snooping around the house.
They're a good team.
They are a good team. I was just going to say that. So as they're like scoping it out, they see Ryan dressed in his pajamas. He gets into the street, almost gets hit by a car, but Angel saves him last minute. And then we have like this really, I actually thought it was kind of a cute exchange where he's mm-hmm. like, are you all right? Ryan's like, you're bleeding. Are you going to cry? And Angel's like, let me think about it. No.
It's
yes,
so cute.
No. It's
so
sweet.
Good with kids.
It was really sweet. The parents come flying out and they're like overly concerned about the kid and like more concerned than normal parents would be. So then he's like, all right, he's a little scamp, isn't he? And we're like, cringe. Okay. Good moment's gone. Good moment's gone.
Angel's just like, what do you refer to children in this century?
What is a child? What is a small human?
How to do human things. So he like rubs his head. He's like, oh, scamp.
All right. But he, of course, he's injured. So, you know, he has to go in and get stitched up, which it's always so funny to me how Angel, you know, he heals fast. He has these little idiosyncrasies and things that happen to his body because he's a vampire, and how he doesn't care if other people see it. And he's just kind of like, treats it as whatever. Like the mom is horrified when she comes back and his wound is healed up. And he's just like, oh, it does that sometimes. Like,
because Angel doesn't know how to human. He doesn't know how to like interact with people. So like to him, it's just like everyone I hang out with would just be like, yeah, whatever, Angel. Like that's nothing. Like you're fine. But then there's like humans that are like, oh my God, like yeah, I can see through the to the bone in your arm right now.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, it's happening for years
now.
Don't worry.
It happens. I come close to death on a daily basis.
Socially awkward. He like doesn't know how to like, I don't know, like act like, oh, this hurts.
It is so funny to me to see how well David Boreanaz plays socially awkward.
Yes.
Because you look at interviews that he does and he's so like confident
unhinged.
And assured.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He's like he's a goofball like in real life, which is so crazy because that is not Angel.
I feel like it would be really hard to play socially awkward in a believable way because it's easy to like overdo it. But he does it in a way that like he doesn't fully come across as creepy. Like I think there's some instances where he does. But he does like come off as someone who's just like not sure what to say or like how to segue. He does it a good job. So the mom, Paige, is like, we should take you to the emergency room. He's like, no, it's fine. And then basically he's like pumping them for information, which the mom is like more than willing to give. And we're getting the vibe that it's a possibly abusive situation with the dad because they move quite frequently. They don't have, you know, many friends. The dad like comes in and as soon as he comes in, the vibe gets like really weird in the room. And he's basically trying to like subtly and not so subtly push Angel out of the house and be like, okay, go. And Angel, I think he's getting the cue, but he's like, nah, I don't want to leave yet.
Like, nah, I'm not ready. I'm staying right here.
I would have been like, okay, I can't get out of here fast enough. Like, we're fine. Cause it's just like, I can't stand awkward situations like that.
Yeah.
Which
is why
tingle.
I think that the dad like twist was also good because we needed Angel to suspect something.
Sure.
Other than, oh, I just saved this kid from whatever. And like, yeah, we needed Angel to kind of think, okay, it might be the dad. So I have to go and I have to like do this and this and this. I have to stay now. And he's like noticing all of these things. So I feel like there was really like no other way. I feel like it had to be the dad. It could have been the mom, but I feel like the dad was like the obvious choice.
Yeah,
do,
no,
like,
and I
misdirect.
Yeah. But they have like the moments where like the dad like pulls out the cigarette and we're like, oh, bad guy, because only bad guys smoke. And then like the mom turns around, it's like, dan, and the dad's like right there. And it was kind of like a little heavy handed to the point where you're like, okay, maybe I'm kind of thinking he's not the bad guy because you're being like, you're pushing this really hard.
I bought it all. I fell for all of it. I was like, this guy, he's the demon.
And it, well, I mean, it also kind of makes sense thematically because you have like the whole daddy issues thing again. But yeah. Anyway, all right. So they're like, well, why would he have want to get away from his own house? Which is really funny because this shouldn't be super sus. There are stories all the time mm-hmm. of kids just wanting to get out and roam because they like the independence.
Or he was sleepwalking.
Or he was sleepwalking, or we don't know. Yeah, I know. I'm like outing myself here, but I, growing up, used to sneak out of my house when I was like 7, like probably my
naughty
kid's age.
Sarah.
No, but Leia, during the day, I would figure out where the creaks were in the house, and my parents had an alarm system in the house, and it was, so you have like the part of the door that like faces the door jamb. There was like a little trigger there, like a magnet that you'd have to pop out, but you had to do it before the door opened too fast. So I would like, I figured out how to sneak across my house, open the door in such a way that I could pop the magnet out and wouldn't send an alarm across the house. So I deactivated my parents' alarm system, and then I would sneak out of the house and go climb trees and sing like a Disney princess.
At night?
At night.
What the hell, Sarah?
I was such a strange child.
What do you mean? I thought you were going to say, oh, I used to like go out and like do bad things.
No, I was like 7 and I would just go like, climb a tree and sing like a Disney princess.
You couldn't do that during the day?
No, it's just not the same vibe, man.
You would just sneak back in and like go to bed?
Yeah, I would put the
– What time would you do this at?
Oh, like 2 or 3 in the morning.
Oh my God, Sarah, in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
What the hell?
I was
so
such
basically,
a
your parents
child.
Should have put a lock on your door.
Probably. Like, and, like you know, that now that I'm saying all this, I'm like wondering, I've always wondered where my daughter gets it from. I'm like, what is wrong with me? Very clearly, the acorn or the kid don't fall too far from the tree.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I remember our neighbor coming out one time and I was just like up in the tree. I would stay out because I really liked it when the sun rose. I liked watching the sunrise from the tree. And our neighbor was like going to work and he hears like what he thought was a bird, and it's just the kid in the tree singing, and he was like, what the heck? And I was never caught. I did it for years. Never was caught. It was very sneaky.
Do your parents know about it?
Oh, yeah. I told them about it years ago, and they just like sighed and were like, well, we did the best we could.
Oh, my God. You crazy child.
Yeah. I liked the independence. I've always been drawn to like the night and like, I don't know, there's something like peaceful just sitting in a tree in
and
the middle
dangerous,
of the night.
Especially in where you lived. In Los Angeles, you lived in LA, just to sneak out in the middle of the night.
Hey, this was around the time that, you know, Angel was airing. I'm sure Angel was around
Angel
somewhere.
Would have saved you.
Would have come and saved Definitely. Me. It would have been amazing. Definitely. So I was totally fine.
Of course.
Anyway, all that to say, kids like to sneak out. So I don't feel like this is super unusual. You know. Anyway, all right. Not trying to compare myself with the
if I was those
demon
parents,
child.
Okay, but let's actually think about it. Like, I don't, those parents were so sketch though. Like, the guy like in the show, because I would have literally just been like, oh, he sleepwalks.
Yeah, they were like way too like, oh my gosh, Ryan, what are you doing out, blah 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 blah. Yeah.
Yeah, like if you're trying to hide that your child is like a psychopath or something and you like think that he's possessed or something, like you come up with like a better cover than the cover that they came up with. I would be like, yeah, he sleepwalks, like he just got out, he does this all the time,
he was looking for a snack but we just moved into the house so we didn't know where the kitchen was yet.
Yeah, like there's so many excuses you could have given, like not sus excuses.
Yeah, instead they're like, I don't know why he was out, oh my gosh, that's strange, what in the
he
world
snuck out through the window, like you said that way too quick, my dude. And then the mom had to, like, yeah, it was just, I don't know, do better. Lie better.
Lie better.
Better.
For real. Come on, guys. Get your story. If you want to protect your family.
You've been doing this for 3 years. Like, you can come up with a better lie.
Yeah, exactly. You're new to the area. All right. So anyway, Wesley is going through trash cans, finds like a baby doll with arms ripped off, and then ends up seeing this like glowing yellow liquidy stuff that looks like demon gook.
Kind of looks like Mora blood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh.
No.
Oh, yeah. Oh. quick. Another Mora Angel. Demon. The Mora Demon was like, oh, my gosh, Angel, I'm going to give you another chance. Do not screw this up. Where's Buffy? The Mora Demon was around because the Mora Demon believes that Wesley is a warrior as well. And so it was like two warriors are together. So that's my headcanon.
Is he trying to set up Angel and Wesley as the couple?
He's like, soulmates. Gosh, didn't work with Buffy. We're just going to try it with Wesley because other better options.
I can go with that.
You can go with that? I don't know that I could go with that. Well, I guess they do complement each other well.
Yeah.
I guess you could read into Wesley's like desire for Angel's approval as like he, you know, wants a little bit more than that.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess so. I do think though, speaking of Angel's relationship with Wesley, I think that like there's also kind of an allusion to Angel's like having a father type relationship with Wesley as well as a friend. One with like the whole family dynamic, because we have the hints that Wesley's relationship with his dad was abusive and that contributes to his insecurity. And I think like he very clearly does desire his admiration and all that stuff. And so I think like him being horrified by the demon, like revealing his plans to take down Angel and like the hints of the daddy issues. I just think like it's just an interesting, like I never thought of like Doyle being like a son figure to Angel, but now that I'm like watching Wesley around Angel, I think I can even see it more with Wesley than with Doyle.
I think the show is also, I mean, from the beginning, ever since like Drusilla was introduced, like Angel is like a paternal
that is true
figure, and especially with Penn that we saw, you know, a few episodes before, and we you know, we've gotten hints that Angel's relationship with his own father, you know, he was a disappointment to his father. So there's a lot of like a lot of paternal energy around Angel. So yeah, I do kind of see that, and I think that's something that they can like relate to each other on as well, is the you know, their relationships with their own fathers and Angel's, you know, vamp daddy whole thing.
His baddie energy. Oh boy, that's going to become a series long thing, isn't it? Yeah. the daddy issues, the baddie issues are not going away. That is for sure. So we have more dialogue between the parents and Angel, and they basically invite Angel back the next night for dinner as a way to repay him. Oh, and then we have that weird moment with Paige pulling out the angels and being like, you're a guardian angel. And everyone's a little like, this feels a little odd. But Angel kind of finally gets the hint and is like, all right, I'm taking off. I'm leaving, and agrees to come back for dinner. I will say, though, it is a little bit hard. We know that the dad is not abusive, but if this was an actual abusive situation, like Angel is suspecting at this moment, by him agreeing to come back the next night when that's clearly not what the dad wants, is putting the woman in a more susceptible and dangerous position, because the dad's going to take out his anger on the woman. So that was one thing that I was like, okay, I know that they're not actually going that direction, but I feel like Angel would have like anticipated that and possibly said, oh no, I couldn't possibly, and found another way to get together with the family without putting the wife in danger. So I felt like that part was a little unrealistic on Angel's part.
What was I going to say? I feel like maybe a way to kind of like in universe explain that would be that Angel suspects that something supernatural is happening in the home because he was sent there through a vision. So maybe he's not thinking the dad is like abusive, but that he's like a demon.
Hovering,
which I mean, still, like, why would you leave if you're suspecting that he's a demon? Like, why would you leave the family there with him? But I don't know, maybe that's like an explanation, like he suspects that it's something supernatural, not like a domestic abuse situation. But either way, like he knows that like something is happening there.
So Angel and Wesley reconvene in the car. Angel's like, something's definitely wrong in that house. And Wesley's like, oh yeah, there's definitely some demon. Someone in that house is possessed by a demon, shows the little vial of demon gook. So then in Angel's office, they are looking over the reports of the family, like basically like tracking them. And Cordelia's like, the mom was telling the truth. So they've lived in like three different locations in three different years. There was a fire, a friend of the family went missing. So then they start to talk about like what type of demon it might be. They're like, oh, this type of like demon is the kind that, like, you know, possesses people and commits mass murder. Interesting how they talk a lot about, they talk about Lizzie Borden, again, which should have been like a massive hint that the boy himself was possessed. They talk about the children's rhymes, which, okay, fair. Why are children's rhymes so flipping creepy and so creepy, like, awful? Like,
that's also like Disney, though. Disney's creepy. If you think about it, like, the old, like, folklore behind Disney stories is like,
it's not Disney. It's Hans Christian Andersen. It's a lot of the writers, and then Disney's kind of like made it all look a lot nicer and more family friendly. But like Little Mermaid dies because the prince chooses the other woman, and she ends up dissipating and becoming sea foam because she was given a choice: either kill the prince or you'll die. And she chose not to kill the prince.
Snow White too.
Yeah. There's just like horrifying stories that Disney has made so much nicer. And along the children's, like, London Bridges, Rockabye Baby. Gretel. What's the baby doing in the treetop? Yeah. I'm sorry. Child abuse. Call CPS. Forget your kid getting out of the house and, you know, walking around. Why is your baby in the tree?
Seriously. Yeah, it's all never very, like, sinister. Like,
and a lot of times those nursery rhymes were written as a way for people to cope during really, like, dark times. Like, it was Ring Around the Rosie. It's about the Black Plague.
Yeah.
Like, Ring Around the Rosie, Pocket Full of Posy, Ashes, Ashes, We All Fall Down, fall We All down, Died. Yeah. Like, yeah. London Rapunzel, Bridges.
The she's queen literally locked in a tower. Like,
yeah. This is really dark.
It's very dark.
So they figure out that it was a Aethros demon, that they're like horrible, horrible demons, and that the one that's possessing the person is a grown-up demon because of the amount of plactocin, I think is what they call it. So they decide that they have to perform an exorcism, but they need a priest in order to do it. Angel says the father seems kind of off. They were afraid of him. So, like, again, hinting that he thinks that the dad may be the one possessed, which I was like, okay, go back to the house as soon as possible. And then Wesley says this line: a father doesn't have to be possessed to terrorize his children. He just has to. And then he trails off. And we're just like, wait, what?
Wesley. What? Yeah.
And then in that moment, my heart just hurt for him, because you're like, oh my gosh, this explains so much about who you are. And then you just think back to all, like, the ways that he tried to prove himself to the Watchers Council,
right,
to Giles, now Angel. There's a common theme here of Wesley failing people because of his own insecurities. And he thinks, you know, he's like, oh my gosh. I mean, sometimes it is his fault, but he's over here, like, beating himself up. Oh my gosh. Anyway, we'll get into that in a second. Whew, that just hit me hard.
Yeah.
All right. So they decide we're going to put some eucalyptus powder and get it to ingest it. And Angel gets the idea to put it in some brownies. Okay. Did Cordelia make these brownies, or did
those
Angel?
Brownies look soft and they ate them without gagging. So I want to say Angel made them. It was not Cordelia. Not whatsoever. No.
But, you know, he got the idea from Cordelia. So, you know, she contributed. It's great.
Did she? Did she?
She gave him a great idea.
The recipe wasn't even hers or her mother's.
Oh, that's right.
It was passed down through her housekeeper.
Oh, no. Oh, that sounds so bad. You're right.
She had to do no work. Cordelia just had to assemble the ingredients and put it in the oven. And she still couldn't do that.
Did not work. Yep.
So it was Angel that made the brownies, I think.
The hilarious part to me is she was able to use a butter knife to cut up the linoleum, but she couldn't cut the brownies. How freaking hard were those brownies?
What was her secret ingredient? What did she say? I added something special. What was
cement.
It?
Cement. It was cement.
Was it cement? Was it the linoleum? Did she just layer linoleum inside the brownies? The ones that she cut up from Angel's floor? Psychopath.
No, if she'd put the linoleum in, she probably would have been able to cut the brownies.
Yeah,
but
true.
It was something else. Yeah. That's
Don't remind
so
me about
funny.
The linoleum.
I'm sorry. Wow, you actually said it this time. Well done. Proud of you.
Linoleum.
Leia goes to bed every night and, like, practices in front of the mirror. Linoleum.
Linoleum.
Oh, that's so funny.
I still get triggered thinking about
that. I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I keep bringing it up, but like that is just so unhinged.
I can't believe she did that. I still can't believe it. 25 years later, I still can't believe she did that.
Guys, if you ever go visit Leia, do not cut up her floors or mess with anything of her, any of her personal items, because apparently that triggers her and I don't think she'll ever forgive you for it.
Don't ever do it.
PSA for everyone out there.
I won't forgive you.
All right. So they're all, they all finish eating. Paige is like, we're going to go get your brownies, Angel. So the parents both leave to go get coffee and brownies. And the kids have a cute moment with Angel where they're like, I didn't like the Brussels sprouts. They're gross. And Angel's like, I buried one of mine in my mashed potatoes. It's like, they're kind of so like having this cute bonding moment. Because what kid has not hid the food
and
that
the
they
girl
didn't
like shows her Brussels sprout hidden in her napkin. I was like, you smart cookie.
Yeah, she knows. Yep. So the parents come back in. Everybody starts eating the brownies. Angel's like staring the dad down like, turn, turn, turn. The dad starts coughing and we're like, oh my gosh, this is it. This is it. And then the girl starts screaming. Stephanie starts screaming. We look over and Ryan's face is contorting, very clearly showing some sort of demon inside of him. And then this is the moment the episode kind of does its first shift. So all of a sudden the dad becomes very like, can you help us? Very compliant, while the mom gets incredibly defensive and is like, you need to leave. You did this. You brought this like demon out of my son. And the dad's like, no, no, no. We both know that's not true. We know like things haven't been fine for a while, that our son actually has a problem and we need help. So Angel calls Wesley, says, I found the demon. It's the boy. And Wesley's like, we're not ready. So Angel's like, put together a binding powder. I'm bringing the boy to you. Angel has a conversation with the parents and says, this is not going to be easy. We can help you though. And the parents are like, this has been awful for the past 3 years, but if you can do something like that would be amazing. And then we have this moment where he says, Seth, the dad says, for the last 3 years, it's all I could do to keep this family together. Now you come here, tell me there may be a reason for all the terror and confusion and a way to end it. Maybe you are an angel. And in that moment, you can hear Angel's theme that has played when he was like accepting his calling and all that stuff, like in the background, which I thought was like a really cool little moment and touch.
Yeah, I love that.
So they go back to Angel's apartment. They're all coming out of the elevator. Cordelia's like, hi, I'm Cordelia. Sorry about the possession and everything. As only Cordelia could.
That was a cute scene.
The dad's like, hello. Thank you for that.
Thanks. It's like that kid that like gets an avocado for Christmas and he goes, thanks.
Avocado kid. And then she's like, I wonder if we should put down some plastic. And then she's like, you know, Angel, are we expecting
so annoying
vomiting here? Because I saw the movie and Angel gives her like the dad look, the look of you.
Like,
not
girl,
the time
shut
to talk
up.
About
it's
it.
Not, this is not it. Stop talking.
Serious dad energy here. All right, so they put a binding powder down to keep the boy under control, and no one is supposed to cross over the boundary because then the demon will be able to get loose. So Wesley and Angel are preparing to take off and go find the priest. Inside the church, Angel's like sweating as he's like
so
looking
nervous
at this ginormous cross.
The last time we saw Angel in a church was in his dream where he was marrying Buffy and he was
sweating
bullets
there as well.
He was like,
all right. So they find a nun. Wesley says, good evening. Sorry to disturb your praying. Hope we haven't made you lose your place, which was really interesting to me because back when, or like later on when Wesley is doing like the chanting to the demon, he actually loses his place. And I think the demon calls that out. And mm-hmm. I just thought it was like kind of like a interesting little mirroring there. The nun instantaneously looks at Angel and knows. She knows that he's evil. But I also think it's really interesting that she also believes him when he says, hey, like, yeah, I'm actually here for doing good. So she mentions that the priest, Father Friedrichs, is dead, that he tried to do another exorcism, but that he saved the woman, but he couldn't save himself. So it's like getting like more and more ominous. The music's like, dun, 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 dun. And she's like, if the child you're trying to save really is possessed with an ethos, my prayers are with you, both of you. You're dealing with something very smart and very dangerous, even more than you, is what she says to Angel. And I was like, well, yikes.
I love that this nun is not afraid of Angel. Like, she knows what he is, but she's not afraid of him. So it's like, yeah, I just thought that was really interesting.
Low-key, I would have loved it if she became, like, a reoccurring character that they would have to go to for, like, information or for help and stuff, because I really liked her. She was really interesting. We also need more women on this show. Come on, guys. Yeah,
seriously.
Then we have this intentional, like, conversation, or this this dialogue from Cordelia when she says to Paige, she says, "It's almost over. Angel is good at this kind of thing." And Wesley, and then she kind of, like, trails off. She's like, "Well, I'm sure they're on their way back with the priest." It's so cool because this is the episode that Wesley proves himself.
Yeah.
This is the episode that Wesley subverts everyone's expectations. And right now, like, Cordelia is even kind of like, we don't – like, Wesley doesn't do much. We don't really need Wesley. No. He actually is able to do something in this episode. So good. So they're trying to fill up some holy water. Wesley's, like, trying to convince Angel, "I can do the ritual. We have the supplies." Angel's like, "It takes mental strength, tremendous strength. You don't have this." Wesley's like, "I know. Resistance to suggestion. I can do that." And they kind of like, Wesley's like, "You don't have sales resistance. How many thigh masters do you own?" And then Wesley's like, "Oh." And then this was cut out of the episode. Wesley defensively says, "The second one was a free gift with my buns of steel."
Oh my God. I love him.
And then Angel says, "Father Fredericks was an expert, and a demon just like this one killed him." Wesley says, "You're saying I can't do it." And Angel says, "That's right." So then Wesley goes, "So bet." And he goes, "Our only option is." And then he grabs the cross and throws it. I love it. I love it because we rarely see Wesley so confident and so self-assured. Like, this is Wesley, what he could be if he believed in himself.
Yeah.
And he's believing in himself regardless of what other people believe. And I thought that was a really powerful moment.
I kind of see it as, it's not him like believing in himself. It's him basically being like, there's no other option and I'm the only one that can do it. And like, there's literally no other way. So I'm going to step up and like do it. Even if, like, I don't think he's really thinking, like, oh, I can do it. It's more that, like, there's no other option and I'm the only choice. So I'm going to step up to the plate and, like, try to do this.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which is I think still a very telling thing. Yeah. Like, it just shows that Wesley is willing to do anything to make sure that, like, people don't get hurt.
I think it shows an inner strength that we haven't seen a ton before. Either way that you look at it. Either way, Wesley is willing to put himself in danger and do the hard thing, which I just find very admirable.
For sure.
Which goes against everything the demon tells him a little bit later. Angel tries to catch the cross. It burns him, says, "That was vulgar." And Wesley says, "But I believe I made my point." What did he mean, "That was vulgar"?
That was vulgar.
Just, like, flip him off. I was like, he's like, "You just threw a cross at a vampire, Wesley."
How offensive, Wesley.
I know. Angel. I was like, wow. Angel's so prim and proper. That was vulgar.
I love him so much. I love that. I love when
the dynamic is
vulgar. Like, what are you talking about, Angel? You murdered millions of people. Not millions, but whatever.
Yeah, right. That was code for Angel being like, "Oh, I'm hurt.
Yeah.
You don't think I can do it? You throw a cross at me? You're showing my weaknesses and my insecurities?"
He's so cute.
How dare you? That was vulgar. All right. So in Angel's apartment, Paige is getting closer and closer. Finally, just like decides to run towards Ryan when he's convulsing, crosses the line. And as she does so, Cordelia and Seth get shoved out of the room. The doors shut. Angel and Wesley are heading towards the office, and Wesley's continuing to read and then realizes he figured out how the priest was killed, because when an Aetheros is cast out, it looks for the nearest body, a warm body, to inhabit, and the force often kills the new host. And they're like, crap, that's a problem, because we're all ready to do this, but we don't have a person or anything to put this demon in. Which, again, this goes towards Wesley. He gets another thumbs up for me, because they know this is a problem. Wesley knows that he's going to be the only person in the room. He will probably die, and he still goes forward and does it. And I just think that's admirable. Cordelia helps Wesley and Angel get down the stairs, and they break into the room, and they are able to force Ryan's hands away from his mom. And the demon retreats back into the boy, and he's kind of like in a comatose state. So then we have this amazing scene. So like the camera kind of like pans around as Wesley's laying out a bunch of items, getting everything ready. We see the boy just kind of laying down. And then as Wesley kind of crosses over the screen, the next time we see the boy, he's sitting up in bed, and it's so eerie.
Yeah.
It's good.
All of the scenes with the boy like in the bed and like with his face like that, it's just so creepy. It's very like The Exorcist, and it's just so spooky. I don't know. Mm.
It's also like really interesting that they, one, do this at Angel's house, and two, in his bedroom on his bed. Because yeah. again, like there's that parallel of both Angel and the boy are possessed by someone. Both soulless beings, you know? So it's just, it's like this really interesting imagery right here. Cordelia has found an Aethros box, which will let a demon inhabit it, so they don't have to worry about someone being inhabited by the Aethros demon. So Angel gives her a address to go check out a little shop. And this Aethros box is apparently like, you have to like have it 600 species of virgin woods, and it has to be handcrafted by blind Tibetan monks. Like it's like super, super specific here. Cordelia's like, nope, don't know where I'm going to find that. And he's like, well, we're just going to try.
What a Ricky. Ricky will have it. Isn't that Rick's the name of the guy?
And stuff. Rick's magics and stuff. If anyone in LA will have an Aethros box, it'll be Rick. And she's like, okay. So the lights start to flicker and buzz. Cordelia takes off. And then we are back inside of Angel's bedroom, and Wesley is speaking Latin. And then we have the demon start to taunt him. He says, your Latin sucks. Wesley says, I know your tricks. You'll not deter me from doing what must be done. And Ryan says, you do something. What makes you think you could do anything? So he starts to insult him on multiple levels. He insults like him personally. And then he says, you couldn't even watch. So then he like insults him for like shows what he failed at when it came to Faith and Buffy. And he says, everyone know you got fired because nothing you do is right. Nothing's going to make him proud of you, which I find really fascinating because neither the demon nor Wesley clarify on who the he is. And I really, it could stand for either Wesley's father or Angel, honestly.
Yeah, definitely.
Wesley says, skimming the surface of my mind, very good, which is so interesting because if the Aethros demon can just simply skim the surface of their minds, that means that Wesley always has either his mind telling him, I've got to be good enough. I've got to show them. I've got to like prove to myself and to them that I'm worth something, that I'm actually valuable, that I can accomplish something. And I love Wesley for so many reasons. And I mentioned this earlier, but I also understand him and relate with him a lot. I think when you have abusive parents, whether it's physically or emotionally or both, you're continually being fed this narrative that you deserve what's happening to you and that it's really your fault. And if you were better, more obedient, more efficient, whatever it is, then you wouldn't need or deserve what's happening to you. But the reality is there is nothing you can do that will stop the abuser from punishing you because the problem is not you, it's the abuser. And this leads to an endless cycle of guilt and insecurity because you think that there's something deficient within yourself. And that's how I believe Wesley feels in this moment. So it's always – and then it turns – it no longer becomes your parents yelling and shouting at you, but your own mind, your own self giving you that negative self-talk saying you're not good enough, whatever. And so I just love this moment because like the fact that he's able to read his mind and he's only able to skim the surface, Wesley – is constantly talking to himself saying you're not good enough. And that leads itself to him being insecure and probably overanalyzing everything to the point where he like becomes awkward and clumsy because his head's probably so crowded with all this stuff. And I find that incredibly relatable. And it just makes me love Wesley so much more.
Yeah, I so agree with that. That was so well said. And again, it's just such a, it's such a subtle but like very huge part of Wesley that really informs everything we've seen about him so far, which is a really interesting thing to do in this episode, because this is the episode where we're supposed to start accepting Wesley, just like all of, you know, just like Cordelia and Angel do. So it's just, yeah, it's so well done. And this is definitely something we'll have to like keep an eye on, because this is a big part of Wesley. And, you know, let's hope that they kind of explore it more in the future, because it's definitely, like we said, there's a huge theme of like fathers and like identity and stuff. So, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where they go with this.
He continues on. He says, all those hours locked under the stairs. What was he, Harry Potter?
That's what I thought too. And the cupboard under the stairs.
You still weren't good enough. Not good enough for daddy. Not good enough for the council. Wesley interrupts him. Wonder if he's going to say, not good enough for Angel. What makes you think these people want you around any more than the others did? And then Angel busts in and says, because I invited him here. And I think this is supposed to be a big moment. This is supposed to be Angel signaling not only to the demon, to the audience, but to Wesley. I want Wesley here. I've invited him here. I he's valued for himself, not because he's a Doyle replacement. And I think Wesley needed to hear that.
No, I was just going to say that I think this episode, like, I'm just going to kind of compare Doyle and Wesley and how they work within the dynamic. And I just feel like Wesley has a lot more knowledge than Doyle does. And I just feel that he fits into this helping Angel. Like, Wesley is really Angel's sidekick. Like, he's very much his partner in fighting evil. And like, Cordelia gets the visions, she sends them out and they do the work. And it's like, with Doyle, it always felt like, you know, Doyle knew stuff, but he didn't know a lot. And usually Angel knew more than Doyle. So I just feel like Wesley brings something completely new to the table, where he's not just Angel's sidekick, but he's like his partner in fighting evil. And without Wesley, Angel wouldn't have been able to figure out a lot of this stuff, you know? So this is something really important that Wesley does bring to the table that, like, no one else does. And it's very similar to, like, Giles and Buffy in that sense, where Wesley's, like, the brains behind it, but also Angel is the brains here, too. So it's, like, I just really love that they show, like, how well they work together, and that without, like, they both contribute almost equally to like solving this vision and like what's going on. And they each bring something unique to the table, which is so great, because it does differentiate Angel's dynamic with Doyle to his dynamic with Wesley. And I think that him and Wesley are a little bit on more equal footing. Whereas him and Doyle were more, you know, Doyle hadn't fully like embraced his mission until Hero. And Wesley is like now starting, like, it's almost like Wesley's like a few steps ahead of Doyle in that respect. But obviously Doyle died and he never got to explore that more. Right. I think he was fully capable of it. But like, Wesley has the Watchers training information all in his head. Like, he knows stuff that are, that is useful. And I think that's what he brings to the table. His brain is like amazing. So,
yeah. Well, that actually like kind of sparked something in me too, because I think obviously Doyle gave his life in season or in episode 9, but up until then he was very fearful. That was kind of like his defining thing, was like, I don't want to put myself in danger. But here we have Wesley from the get-go constantly putting himself in danger, constantly willing to jump and do that. So like you said, he is a few steps ahead, and that's not to diminish what Doyle ultimately does do, but we're watching like probably the biggest separation between Doyle and Wesley is Wesley's willingness to jump into the fight fully without a care for himself versus Doyle, who kind of held himself back. And then, okay, so this makes it even harder when, you know, what Angel comes in and says, I want him here, you know, I invited him. And then Ryan says, okay, then you're stupider than he is. Go ahead, Wesley, tell him why he's a fool to trust you. And then he starts to attack their relationship and is like, tell him how you plan to kill him. And Wesley immediately is like, that's not true. That's not true. Because he's thinking, man, I finally earned my spot. And now you're going to take that away from me. Wesley completely loses his cool, disturbs the binding powder circle, and Ryan ends up getting the cross stabbed in Wesley's neck. Okay, I feel like they kind of, that must have been like a shallow wound or something, because they just like breezed right past that. I was like, that should have killed him.
Yeah.
So Angel gets him back out, And then we cut to the magic shop.
Cordelia. Jesus
so
Christ.
Random. We're like such an intense scene, intense episode. And then we have Cordelia over here browsing for a random box. And like they're treating it so blasé. And it's so totally different from the rest of the episode. But it kind of works. It's kind of funny.
Also, she's looking specifically for a very specific box. Like you can't really just be like, oh, yeah, this is going to work. Like, no. Oh, it's fine. Like, Cordelia, why do you think they need a box that's made from like 600 different virgin trees and carved by Tibetan monks? Like, I feel like that like implies that you can't just get any other box. Oh, it's $20 cheaper. Okay.
It's like your mom. I don't know if your mom did this. My mom did this. We'd be like, Mom, I would like an iPod for – I'm dating myself. I would like an iPod for Christmas. She's like – goes Christmas shopping and is like, wow, this is so expensive. You know what? We're just going to get the little knockoff one. That'll be good enough. We're like, no. I wanted that one. She's like, wow, you're so ungrateful.
Meanwhile, like, the one she got can only have like 3 songs on it.
Exactly.
You can't like do anything with it.
And you're missing the one little plug-in that will actually allow you to download more songs. So you're stuck with what was the one, was it U2 or Bono who like he released his album on every single Apple U2. Device? And that's all. Yes, U2, and that's all you have. Not speaking from experience or anything here.
I feel like this is going to trigger a lot of people because we all just collectively woke up one day and there was a whole U2 album on our iPhones or like iPod, like the music iPod. It's just an iPod.
It's just an iPod, which funnily enough, apparently U2 just a couple weeks ago actually like apologized for that.
Yes,
was like,
I saw that.
Sorry. And everyone was like, sorry, dude, a little too late. I had to listen to your music first.
The worst part was you couldn't like delete it.
Yeah, I know.
You not get rid of this album. It was just permanently on your like devices, like everywhere. And then you would like be listening to music on shuffle or something, and then a U2 song would come on. You're like, what the fuck is this song? Like, I didn't ask for
and
this.
It's just taking up space in your storage, and
it
you're
was
just like
so bad. But news to I actually deleted the one on my phone like when that apology came out. I was like, oh yeah, isn't there like this, don't I have this album on my phone? So I went and I was like, let me see if I can delete it now. And you can delete it now. So if anybody still has it on their phone, you can go in and you can delete it now. Thank God.
You're welcome, everyone. So if you take anything away from this episode, know that you can now delete your U2 audio on your iPod, on your computer. I mean, it was everywhere. It was on iTunes.
Anywhere that you had iCloud, it was it was there.
Yep.
That was the most insane thing that's ever happened to me, like after COVID-19.
It really did define a generation. We all remember. Where were you when you woke up and U2 put their whole entire album on your iPod shuffle?
That was insane.
Anyway, we're getting completely derailed. I don't even remember what the point of that was. Okay.
Well, it was the box. Cordelia just decided to get a box that wasn't the box that she needed just because.
It's like all of us waking up and finding U2's album. That's that box right there.
Yeah.
Like this isn't what I wanted.
We did not ask for this.
All right. So in Angel's apartment, Wesley is berating himself. I let my guard down. It won't happen again. Angel is like also feeling guilty. He's like, you almost died. You're not going back in there. It's too dangerous. He could have killed you. It's interesting to watch both of them, their guilt eating them up. Seth says, my son, what about him? And then we see the toys on the table and the marbles like spell out the words, help me. And I love Wesley. He goes, Angel, we don't have a choice. And I was like, Wesley sees himself in that scared boy and wants to help him. And that was so moving. And then this moment, we hear Doyle's voice, the good fight, yeah? And we turn around, the doors fling open, and it's Ryan speaking as if Doyle was right there. He says, guess who's here, Angel? He's talking to me right now. Doyle wants to ask why you couldn't protect him.
Ooh.
So Angel grabs a kitchen towel, rips it in half, wraps it around his fist, and then picks up the cross and says, I'm ending this. And then Cordelia walks in and is like, okay, so all they had was Angel's like, get it ready. I don't care. Bring it out. And she's like, all right, okay. All right. Ryan says, you let him die just like he's going to let me die. Aren't you, Daddy? The two great protectors. So again, like we're now starting to like go from the metaphorical to the actual literal, like, okay, we're mirroring these two protectors, these two daddies together. And then we have the exorcism. The demon comes out of Ryan and then it ends up hitting the box, completely shattering it. And then the demon disappears and we have no idea where it is. But at least, hey, the boy is saved, right? All good. So Wesley sees that the demon went up the elevator shaft and Angel's like, okay, well, it needs some way to gain back its strength. So it's going to be like, what is it with like demons and salt? Because the Moira demon needed to go to the salt mines.
They need a damp, salty place.
Well, salt is like a preserving agent sometimes, right. So maybe that's what they're thinking, but it just is kind of interesting how they're like, this is actually very similar to the Moira demon.
Yeah.
It's part of the Moira colony. He's like, ooh, a distant cousin of the Moira demon.
What? Yeah. Why didn't Angel try its blood?
All of a sudden he's like, bam.
Maybe now this one. Maybe this demon.
With the power.
Exactly. I was just going to say that.
Yep. Yep. Oh, great mind.
That right ideal. Here. Ideal situation.
And he's like, peace out, Ryan. Sorry, I can't help you guys.
Should have tried it. Well, he could have still helped Ryan, but also been human at the same time. But then the show would have been over because then it's like, there's no reason for him not to like, you know.
Then the show would have become Wesley the Rogue Demon Hunter. And ooh, we would have followed his seek for
But Angel's so much more interesting.
As a primary character, I think Angel is more interesting. Wesley works really well as like a side character, but like all on his own, I don't think it would have been as compelling. But darn it, the sequel or the ending that we all could have gotten. It would have been worth it to see Angel and Buffy together, though. So the Andersons have gone home. Everything seems to be all right. And Wesley and Angel start to head out to go find the demon that they think is at the sea caves. And then we have like this really sweet conversation between Angel and Wesley where Wesley says, Angel, before we go any further, I just want to assure you, like, you know, we're going to be fighting side to side with the demon said before. Angel stops. He puts his hand on his shoulder like, hey, I want you to pay attention. What I'm going to say is important. And the script says, time to dispense of this. He says, I know you're not planning to kill me, Wesley. And it says, Wesley relaxes visibly, nods. Thank God that's cleared up. And Angel says, but you're willing to. And that's good. Now come on. And it feels like we've reached a whole other level of respect for the two of them. And I feel like that's significant.
Yeah. And I feel like Wesley's like insecurities about that, like, he does feel that way, but he doesn't want to say it out loud because a normal person would be like offended, like, oh, right, you know, you're willing to kill me. Like, what does that say about me and blah, blah, blah. But with Angel specifically, he needs people like he needs people around him that are willing.
The peace of mind to, for him.
Exactly. Yeah. That are like he knows they're willing to put a stop, like stop him if he were to ever be at like an actual threat. Yeah. So this is actually a good thing for Angel. Like this is a reason that Angel is going to trust you now.
Yeah.
Is that you're willing to do that should that come. And that goes back to the conversation he had with Cordelia on the rooftop where she's like, you know, I'll kill you dead. Like if there ever comes a time where I need to kill you, like I'll kill you dead. And that's another thing where it's like he needs people like that around him because otherwise, you know, he's just going to – if he turns into Angelus – they're dead. So,
Angel is always more concerned about the security of people than he is for himself. And he is, I think, more afraid of what he is capable of than pretty much anybody else. And I mean, again, I mean, who's the person we've seen killed him? Buffy.
Yeah.
So like Angel recognizes he needs people like that. And also too, this goes back to like the fact that he says, I know that you're willing to, and that's good. I don't know that Doyle was necessarily willing to. And I wonder if they're, again, he's trying to highlight saying, hey, I need you.
Yeah.
And maybe Doyle would have gotten to that point, but I need you, you specifically, because I see that you are brave and that you actually are willing to do what needs to be done.
Exactly.
and we'll actually go for it and do it. And I think that kind of goes back to what you said a couple episodes, where Wesley will do what needs to be done, no matter the consequence, no matter how hard it is. And that's something that Angel sees in him and admires. And that's something the show is kind of like continuing to build on.
And this is why it's like, this is a good fit. Like, you would think it's not a good fit, because it's like, oh, Wesley doesn't completely trust Angel, and Angel, you know, and he's afraid of what Angel's capable of, but like that's the good. Whole point. Like, good. This is a good yeah. thing, which is yeah. weird, but it just fits so well. Like, this is the dynamic that fits well together. And I mean, we're gonna meet another character later on that's gonna have a similar kind of dynamic with Angel, and it's also gonna fit really well. So yeah,
can't wait.
Angel's just like collecting friends that are willing to kill him, and like, I love that for him, you know.
He's like, oh, I can sleep well at night, finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So they come up to the Aethros demon, who now is in a physical form, and the script calls him powerful, creepy, but solemn and perhaps somewhat weakened. He doesn't seem surprised to see them. He says, you're a fool. You think to destroy me. You're dealing with forces beyond your comprehension. And we're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. We know, a great big evil, blah, blah, blah. But that boy didn't have a soul. Ooh, and then we're like, what
the hell?
And then they cut to the family and we're like, no, 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 no. What's going on? Yeah. And the boy's just kind of like sitting there, and he's angry because he only got 7 marshmallows and Stephanie got 9, and you know, they're arguing and stuff. And then we kind of have like the voiceover of the Aethros demon as we're watching this, and he's like, do you know what the most frightening thing in the world is? Nothing. That's what I found in the boy. No conscience, no fear, no humanity, just a black void. I couldn't control him. I couldn't get out. I never even manifested until you brought me forth. I just sat in him and watched as he destroyed everything around him. Oof. Not from a belief in evil, not for any reason at all. The boy's mind was the blackest hell I've ever known.
Wow. What? Honestly, that monologue gives me chills because it is so sinister, and it's just so crazy. Like, and then it kind of makes me think about like, Angelus wasn't even that evil, if you think about it. If we're supposed to remember, like, Angelus, the judge touched him and said, oh, there's no humanity in him, but it's like, Angelus still had like fear. Angelus still had like emotions. Like, he enjoyed art, and he, you know,
he enjoys killing people. He actually has hopes and desires, and
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, so to think of like a human child that has nothing.
Yeah.
And a demon, like this demon that thrives off of like mass murder. It's just insane. Like, yeah.
Yeah, the levels kept getting upped because you have like Angelus, who's going to be like, oh my gosh, the worst thing we've ever found. And then you have the Aethros demon, the nun's like, oh my gosh, you know, he's worse than you are. Yeah. And then the Aethros demon is like, oh no, there's a little soulless boy out there who's actually worse than all of us. And we're like, what in the world? So nothingness is worse than evil? That's chilling. Absolutely chilling.
Yeah, because the way he explains it is there's no fear, there's no humanity. There's nothing.
Yep. Yeah. He does. And he does things for no reason, which also, now that I'm thinking about it, reminds me of the dad, because the dad, when he finds out that Angel can help, he says, oh, you're giving me hope because you're telling me that there might be a reason for all of this. But now we're taking that all away because there is no reason. This boy does this for like, oh, and now he knows he has to go back and tell the boy's father that there's just no reason for this. That's just who he is. And that's, life without hope is just not worth living. It's the worst. Passion the Nerd notes the comparison between Ryan and Angel, noting that both are or were inhabited by demons, but that it is Ryan's soulless human side that is more terrifying and responsible for his evil than the demon itself. And that is probably a reflection of how Angel feels about himself. He says that Angel feels that he is not good. It's not the demon that needs killing. It's the man. Mm-hmm. And while Wesley is not possessed, he also feels that he is not good enough due to how he was treated by his father. So both men are wrestling with feelings as though they're not worthy. And then Passion the Nerd goes on to talk about how Angel can't separate himself out from Angelus, and that his reaching for redemption is his own emotional journey to give his life meaning. And I would argue that Wesley is also searching for a way to give his life meaning as well. And I just love the parallels there. Everybody is kind of holding up a mirror to someone else and reflecting something different off of it. And it just makes for like a really interesting picture. So we find out that the Aethros demon is the one that was like sending out the marbles saying, help me, that he was the one that caused the boy to sleepwalk because he's trying to end his life so he could at least be like cut out of his misery. He's like, I know you bring death. I do not fear it. The only thing I have ever feared is in that house. Oof.
That is crazy.
Okay, so humans are capable of not having a soul. That's interesting.
That's new. Yeah.
It is new. But then I was thinking back to living conditions because Kathy was taking Buffy's soul.
Would she have been like Ryan?
That's horrifying.
Yeah. But it's also – it's just – I think it's interesting because I feel like the concept of the soul in the Buffyverse is like a very ambiguous thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like – this episode, like one of the criticisms about it is like they introduce this idea that like a human can have no soul and it's this completely like it's devoid of like anything. There's nothingness. But then we see like other soulless beings have hopes and desires and like even mm-hmm. if they're like hedonistic in nature and like they're self-serving and whatever, like an evil, like they're still evil. Like they still are right. driven by something
right.
like evil or like you know, like I said, with Angelus, like he enjoyed art, like, you know, he was afraid of like, you know, being killed or like he wanted to end the world or like there's just always something more even when they're soulless. So like to introduce this concept of like a human who doesn't have a soul and there's just nothing there, it's just a very like big thing to introduce and then not like elaborate on, I think. So I don't yeah. know how like seriously yeah. I can take it because I can confirm we don't see anything like this ever again, like in the Buffyverse. So it's just, it's interesting, but I feel like it's, I don't know. It's just kind of like.
If they were leading somewhere with it, then it would have been even more interesting because it is a fascinating concept to actually unpack, but they yeah. don't. Instead, yeah. it just kind of makes things a little bit more muddied. I know they're increasingly trying to say, oh my gosh, like the idea of a soul and not a soul and stuff like that is flexible and like you said, ambiguous. We don't know. And so like it adds a whole other layer of complexity to the show, which is what they want to do. Like it's not black and white.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it would have been a really interesting path to go down. Okay, so in light of that, I wanted to read an email that we got from a listener, Sarah Guido, and she actually emailed us like way back in August about this episode, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm bookmarking this, and we're going to read it because it was just so well done, so enjoy. So she says, hello, while listening to your podcast, I realized a few connections in the episode I've Got You Under My Skin. In the episode, they're talking about the young boy who was possessed. He's a psychopath, and he sets his family's house on fire and is the worst to his sister. They recreate this scene in Law & Order SVU a few years later. I thought it was very interesting that the writers were possibly influenced by Angel when making that episode. Also, I thought it was interesting that even though many demons are evil, the demon that possessed the kid who was a sociopath slash psychopath was scared of the child because he had no soul, nothing good or pure in him. Having a soul, genuine emotion is what makes people human, and fear is one of those emotions. So the fact that they made a demon more human than a child, that a demon is scared of a child when children are portrayed as the epitome of innocence and humanity is indicative of the idea of Angel, that it is not so clear cut. People are not necessarily inherently good at birth. They can be bad and many will be. And some demons can be good. So humanity and goodness can be a choice, which addresses one of the many main premises of Angel. You can choose to be good and you can choose to be evil. And there is a gray area, but where you make that choice determines who you are. So yeah, just wanted to give my thoughts on that. And well said, Sarah.
Yeah,
thank you for sending that.
And that's a really good point that, you know, we just talked about how like this kind of makes the idea of the soul kind of ambiguous, but it also reinforces the whole theme of the show, which is choice, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you made that video about Angel and choice, and it just kind of reaffirms that mm-hmm. in this episode where Angel still has those like demonic urges, but he chooses to mm-hmm. do good, which is just interesting. It's getting all muddied, but it's like
it's but the like theme good. Is still there, yeah. the common theme of choice. Like, okay, we're recognizing it's not so black and white. There's going to be evil beings that might do good sometimes. There's going to be good people that choose evil, and it's just it's a matter of choice. It's not a matter of what you're born with. And I think that really is encouraging for both Wesley and Angel, because Angel can now choose, now has the ability to choose, but also Wesley.
Yeah.
Wesley is not defined by his past. He's not defined by his father's expectations of him or the failures he's had in the past with his Watchers, his time at the Watchers Council. He's now defined by the choices that he's making right now. And in this episode, he's making choices to go save someone else and put his own life on the line, which shows that he's actually worth a lot more than what his father has given him credit for in the past. And
right.
I really love that.
Yeah. So. And another point I want to make is just a comparison to Buffy. And it's a conversation I was having with somebody the other day in the Discord about how the whole point of the Buffyverse, like the entire purpose, the whole reason it was created was to subvert like a stereotype. On Buffy, it was, you know, the helpless blonde girl running down the alley, and then she turns around and turns out that like she's not the victim, she's actually the hero. And I feel like with Angel, and this is something that happens over and over again on the show, just as on Buffy, it's always like, oh, like you think one thing's going to happen and then another thing, it like kind of flips a stereotype on its head. With Angel, it's very similar, but it's like you think that this monster is evil, but then really you find out later that like the monster is the good guy. So it's just interesting because I feel like I've never thought about it this way until I had this conversation with this person. And it was just interesting because it is really like the whole purpose of these shows is to like do the opposite of what you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that like I'm going to keep in mind now, because there are so many times where this is the case on Angel in like a completely opposite mm-hmm. way than it is on Buffy. But it's just, yeah, it's just very interesting and something that I've never paid attention to before, even though it's like subconsciously, you know it because that's what we're right. watching. But like you right. never actually think about it, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, because I mean, like the monster, like, or the demon, the Aethras demon is not necessarily good, but he's the victim in this episode.
Yeah, which know? Is crazy. Like, you wouldn't think that, yeah. but then it kind of goes with the whole, like, theme of the entire, like, Buffyverse.
All right, so the parents are tucking Ryan into bed and they take the locks off the doors. They're like, no need for this anymore. This is great. They all go to sleep. Ryan gets up and grabs the matches off of his parents' nightstand, which I was like, okay, you don't leave matches on your nightstand when you have littles roaming their house, but you know, we'll forgive you for that one, I guess. Locks his parents in the door, starts in his sister's room, completely douses it with gasoline and lights it on fire. The parents are able to break out. Just as Angel bursts through the window, saves Stephanie, Wesley comes in from the other side. They grab Ryan. They grab the parents. They go out as the house goes up in flames. Then we cut back to the sirens and Kate is here. I was like, oh, hello, Kate. She's in like the last 30 seconds of the episode and then that's it. But we have just enough of Kate here to be like, oh, okay, her and Angel are not totally okay yet. She's still a little unsure about what's going on with him. They're going to take Ryan into social services. They're going to want to talk to him alone and evaluate him. And I was like, ooh, like I feel like this is going to be a problem. Like maybe not on the show, but like taking a kid like this into social service, like what are you going to
yeah.
do? Lock yeah. him away in like a psych ward for the rest
and
of his life?
And that's why it's like you introduce this like brand new thing. So I guess like metaphorically, this is supposed to be a kid that's like a sociopath or a psychopath, where it's more of like a like condition that he has. So it's like, can it be treated? Can he get better? Obviously, right. like you can't put a soul in him because, or can you? I don't know. It's just a very, how dangerous is he really? I mean,
are we not helping him? Like, could we help him?
Yeah. yeah. So it's like, oh, you're really just going to give him over to
more people that he'll probably murder at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It just kind of ended and you're like, and the family's like, well, we kept our family together. And I'm like, wait, but he was part of your family. I don't know.
How did he, like, I don't understand.
Yeah. How was he born without a soul? Are the parents, do they have like the recessive soulless gene?
Yeah.
Should they not procreate anymore? Should like they be tested and their daughter be like tested for this as well? Like, you know, there's just a lot of questions.
Yeah. But
I guess that's not the point of the episode. So we'll overlook it.
Exactly.
So Seth comes over and says, I wasn't able to cover for him anymore. And he's just feeling really bad. He's like, I was trying to do the best thing I could for my son. I wanted to help him. And I can't do that anymore. And Angel helps him kind of let go of this and says, you held your family together. Basically, that's not your responsibility anymore. I understand that need to protect him, but move forward with your life. So we see Paige and Stephanie. He goes over to them, and then we watch Angel look over at Wesley and Cordelia, very much the parallel between them. And they both go to their respective families, and that's the end of the episode. And we'll never know what happened to Ryan. No, but I mean, regardless of all of the like myriads of questions we have about that, I just am so excited to see where we're going forward just now, knowing what we know about Wesley, but also this next episode with where it goes with Angel and
yeah.
this daddy issues. Ugh, yeah. Yeah. These next
Everybody
few
needs
are just
a lot of therapy on these shows.
Wouldn't it have been so fun if they'd had an actual therapist that like joined the team and then we got like these really like cool conversations and
yeah, well, it would have been kind of like Interview with a Vampire style where it's like Angel's telling this to his therapist like in the future and he's like recalling yeah. all of these events that happened.
Yeah.
But
that would be pretty cool. Called the yeah. Angel Diaries.
The Angel Diaries. Ooh.
The Vampire Diaries. Oh, wait, no, can't do that one.
Another thing the Vampire yeah. Diaries would have knocked off.
The funny thing is they completely start to get rid of the diary things as the show goes on.
Yeah.
Vampire Diaries. Because vampires keeping diaries is stupid.
I'm sorry. Seriously.
What is he, a 16-year-old girl? No. Like
you just have to keep buying more because you just live forever. So it just never ends. Like imagine having to fill out a diary entry every day for the rest of your life.
No.
I would just be like, today I napped all day.
I abstain from blood again. I'm so hungry. The bloodlust has nearly devoured me, but I carry on for another day. Like, what else do you like? Because you'd have to stay away from, well, I guess not in Vampire Diaries. I'm confusing yeah. Vampire Diaries and Angel. Because if Angel had a diary, like, all it would be is Buffy, Buffy, heart, Buffy.
I feel sad.
Anyway, all right. We have some amazing episodes coming up. Now that we finally are over She and Expecting, we really can just like fully dive into the rest yeah. of this season. And then in just a few short months, we will be in season two. And I am just – cannot wait.
Same.
We always love hearing from you guys. We haven't ever read an email on here before, but if any of you would love to share your thoughts with us and you have anything that you feel like you just have to get off your chest, like a burning need to talk about something, feel free to email us. Obviously, you guys have some great things to say. You give us some really good insights, and it's just always a pleasure to hear from you. So let us know what you think about the whole concept of a soulless human being introduced into the Buffyverse, because incredibly fascinating. Tell us what you think of Wesley's character development, of his relationship with Angel and Cordelia and all that good stuff. And as always, guys, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.